Aquan tomb.
Sybilis.
I like that.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
Ted the Younger, episode 74. How are you?
A good year.
Oh, is that when you were born?
Yep, 1974.
Nice.
I thought you knew that because you said Ted the Younger, so.
No. Well, since we're there, I have Pliny the Elder.
Ah, there we go.
Yeah. So it is a Russian River IPA.
Ooh.
8% alcohol by volume, and you can only get this one in their tap room, so it is not packaged for sale.
Ah. Where's Russian River?
It's a Santa Rosa area, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like up in that area, north of San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
So another one from number one fan, Paul.
You got a good beer. You got a good beer line over there. Does he work in San Francisco? Because he goes to SF a lot.
No, I asked him how he got these. So he said that a friend of his, he and his wife's, was moving from like up in the Santa Rosa area to Virginia. So wanted to go to, a concert at the Hollywood Bowl, and said,
okay,
can we stay with you? Because they live in Santa Barbara. Did I say Hollywood Bowl? Santa Barbara Bowl. I'm sorry.
Okay. I was about to say, that's such a coincidence.
Yeah. And they went to the concert at the Santa Barbara Bowl, and Paul and his wife live in Santa Barbara. So she said, can I get you anything? And he says, bring me something from Russian River. So she brings a case of Pliny the Elder.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. So he gives me a couple. So yeah, I thought that was very cool. Very generous.
All right.
Let me open
it. Let's crack it.
Yeah. Enough talking. All right. Let's get this.
You could talk after the pour.
That's right. I'll talk while I do the pour. Ooh, but we got to get the ASMR up in here. So, and then I'm drinking it out of a Dogfish Head IPA glass. So, figure a good IPA deserves a good IPA glass.
Of course.
All right, I'll let the head go down there and take a sip in a second. But what do you have? You have something pretty cool in label.
Yeah, so, I definitely go for the cool labels. And it kind of, it has a musical feel to it. You know, a couple weeks ago, we had the You're in the Jungle, Baby, which is that collab. And, of course, I was wrong. Evil Twin is out of New York. I said it was California.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, that's just for a little corrections there. But today I have Urban Roots, which is in Sacramento, California. So we're in another NorCal. And it's called Nothing Can Stop Me, Unfiltered Double IPA, 8.5. And we have to say that, you know, you and I joke about it. But the ABV thing, although, you know, we make fun that it's a contest, we're not really competing at that. I think some people have been saying, like, oh, you guys are really into the ABV. And I'm,
well, you know, when you show up with a 14 trying to destroy me. And in doing so, you destroy yourself.
Yes, yes. All right. So this is a unfiltered double IPA with Citra, Strata, and Galaxy.
Yeah, I'd love to read this to you, but I can't see it. It's like,
I'll crack mine.
It's like Odie Green with a, you know, black writing, but it, like, I don't know. It's tough. I'm trying to see what... Oh, it's a double IPA. Okay. I can't see what the hops are, though. It's, you know, I should just go get a magnifying glass and be done. Oh, Pliny the Elder died in 79 AD while saving people during the eruption of Mount Vesuvius. Oh, very
wow.
Cool. Yeah. So maybe, hopefully after this, I'm not erupting or anything. Well, no, but I guess not, because he would save me.
Right.
He was immortalized by his nephew and adopted son. Man, I can't even see this. I'm going to stop now.
How's it taste?
Oh, it tastes fantastic. I mean, it is so smooth. Like, it's as crisp as a lager, but it's a double IPA. I mean, it's like really amazing. I don't know why they don't package it for sale. I would buy this.
I think that's part of the mystique, right? They do that?
Yeah, that's how it is sometimes. Like, you can only get it there, you know? And then everybody makes all these, like, trips, and, you know, and then they're like, then there's like a whole black market for Pliny the Elder.
Then you go to your local, you know, keg store. door and they're like, oh, we have something in the freezer. Come with us.
Yeah.
But so my beer is holding up very well. And I'm glad that you have said in the past what you said about cans, how cans don't let them skunk.
Well, you don't see light, you know, they're really a, and I think can technology, you know, like they've eliminated to make it that tinny flavor, like you kind of got in the past and stuff, you know? And
right. So I bought this last Friday and I was planning on having it as the backup beer in case I didn't get a beer last Friday.
Ah.
And I actually left it in my car at work on the roof of the parking lot. And I was like, you know, as Southern California day, it wasn't that hot that day, but I'm like, ugh, I'm on the fence.
Still gets over 100 degrees inside the car, though, you know?
Right?
Yeah.
So I think, but it was only in the car on the roof from like 4 o'clock on or something like that, 3 o'clock on.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm completely wrong. 'Cause I took that day off of work. So it was in the car from 10 a.m. through. So it was the whole day.
Ah.
But it doesn't have any taste of skunk in it. So it held up. It did its thing. I guess it was in a cool place within the car. Like, I think it was under my passenger's seat.
Oh, yeah.
Found it. So
heat
it
rises, cool yada, there. Yada.
Yeah. But I'm very happy to say that it was, it does not, it's hazy by design, and it's going down very smoothly. And the Citra of the three hops that are in there, the Citra is dominating it. So I like that. It's a floral citrus, you know, kind of hop.
Grapefruity.
Mm.
Yeah,
exactly.
I like that stuff too. Ted, how was your week this week?
Awesome. Another awesome week. But I did.
Oh, I love awesome.
But I did sign a bunch of NDAs, so I don't even know what I could talk about. I think I could keep it together this week. But let me scan. We did a couple events for the Asian Pacific Islander Month, which is finally wrapping up. Very, very tense, intense month of events. A couple events every week, and a lot of lifting around. So I took a lot of lifts around town because all the buildings for work are so close to each other, but all the parking lots are such disasters. You know, it's easier to take a Lyft, you know, that's for
you're talking about Lyft as in like Uber and Lyft?
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
So there's this thing where you could spend $10 and get a $50, $5 off each ride. And the buildings are so close that a lot of my rides this week were just free. And it's amazing. So as long as you can use 10 rides, you know, that are super local, it's worth it. So I started this week, and one of the panels that I can discuss, we talked to a bunch of influencers about being Asian Pacific Islander in this new Instagram, YouTube video space, a couple cool people from BuzzFeed, and then a couple people from independent YouTube channels.
So you don't have to go into what they were for or who they're with, but the NDAs now are because Asian Pacific Islander folks are on YouTube and they can't really talk about what they're doing?
No, so this is why I can actually talk about this. The NDA stuff I can't talk about. So
oh, okay.
I'm saying, like, I'll have to navigate around the you know, like some of the things that I watched.
Sure.
I can't talk about. But yeah, so it was really fun to watch these people. And it's so funny because Simi Singh and Atomic Mari were the two people that I had thought Audrey had mentioned, you know, in her YouTube following and things like that. But it was actually like the two BuzzFeed guys, Stephen Lim and Jen Regelio. Oh man, she's gonna be upset, but she doesn't listen to pot. I don't think she listens.
Well, you know, give it the old college try.
Yeah. Jen Regelio.
All right,
is that right? We'll go with that.
Yeah.
So it was funny because when I grabbed some sound bites for them for the show, as we've said, you know, we're gonna try to grab when we run into famous people.
Hey, it's Stephen Lim, and I have never listened to Trailer Junkies podcast. But here you go.
This is my first shot at it.
Hi, my name is Mari Takahashi, and I have never listened to Trailer Junkies podcast.
And I got a couple of reads from them about not promoting our show because they haven't heard it.
Hello, my name is Jen. I've never listened to Ted's podcast, but I'm telling you right now, it's great.
Just some honest comments about Trailer Junkies podcast from these influencers. And when Audrey heard them, she was like, oh my God, I love Ladylike. Oh, and I love Steven's food videos on YouTube. So it was funny because I saw the brand of BuzzFeed as a news and kind of millennial space. It doesn't come across, like Audrey never talks about BuzzFeed, but she talks about these brands that are within BuzzFeed. So I thought that was interesting for me from a brand marketing perspective, where the overarching brand is BuzzFeed, but they have these internal brands that are just as important, if not more so, for connecting to the millennial and then the post-millennial audiences.
But isn't that how a lot of parent companies operate, though?
Yeah.
You look at Google and how many things do they have or something, or,
right,
you know, or Microsoft. I mean, like, we're on Skype and Microsoft runs all this stuff, you know, or...
Exactly.
And if anybody remembers Flickr, wait, are they still a thing?
I don't know.
Not Flickr, Yahoo.
Yahoo, yeah.
But Yahoo had Flickr and, you know, all the other Yahoo properties, whatever. But but yeah, I mean, there's like these parent companies and then all this stuff is within the parent company.
Yeah.
That branches out and has fingers and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's so hard. Like, if you want to do research on like corporation ethics or something before you make a purchase, good luck, you know, finding out like who's into what and what they're doing. And I mean, you don't know. It's impossible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I shouldn't say it's impossible, but do you really want to make it your life's work?
Do you want to spend the time on it
to find out, like, do they use PBA and plastics? You know, it's like, how good luck, you know, but anyway.
So that was midweek. There's a bunch of things I can't discuss. And then last night, thank you for rescheduling this to Saturday night.
Yeah.
Last night we went to the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh, okay, cool.
And we saw Little Mermaid with the songs performed live by Lea Michele, Harvey Fierstein.
Oh, that's awesome.
And a bunch of other people. But it was so great when we went Friday night, and right now it's kind of drizzling and it's Saturday night and they have the second show. So I feel bad for the people that are out there now. Hopefully it won't be too bad.
Yeah, it's raining here and rained on me all day today, pretty much. Well, not all day, but definitely half the day.
Cool. So let's get into your week then.
We'll start with one thing. Today I rode about 63-mile mountain bike ride, 11,415 feet of climbing. Just to give you an example, mile 57, you know, of the 63, I'm hitting 37% grade, you know, it was horrible. It was horrible. My tendons around my knees are so like sensitive, like so inflamed.
Do you wrap them or anything?
No, Clarissa rubs me down.
Okay.
Yeah. She like massages them and stuff. And so what I did, I started at Gaviota State Park, right where the 1 and the 101 interchanges that turn off to like go to Lompoc.
Mm-hmm.
And then I rode clear across over to 154. So San Marcos Pass, and turned around, came back. But man, the climbing was just, I mean, over 11,500 feet pretty much, and just destroyed me. I'm like blasted right now.
No, that's after this Piney the Elder.
Well, that's he needs to rescue me like they did at Mount Vesuvius. But then the other thing that we needed to do and we should have done years ago and finally got around to it was getting a library card.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, you know, people tell me about books and sometimes I want to do like an ebook or an audio book. I like reading books, you know, just regular books.
Uh-huh.
And I especially enjoy hardcover books. But sometimes I know I'm not going to get to a book or get through a book or whatever, and I want to listen to the book like a podcast almost, you know, or or sometimes we're going to be like traveling and flying and I want to read a book and then I put it on, I get the ebook, you know, for the e-reader.
Right.
And, you know, so I don't have to carry like a 5-pound book around Europe with me. You know what I mean? Figured like, yeah, let's get a library card and then you could get like, you know, borrow ebooks. You could borrow audiobooks.
Yeah.
You could borrow, you know, well,
DVDs. You You can even borrow DVDs.
Yeah, like all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, why not? I mean, you know, like how, it's like a no-brainer.
You already pay for it.
Yeah, and taxes.
Exactly.
Right. I also donate, too, to the library.
There you go.
About 50 bucks a year helps keep, because otherwise they lose hours and all that stuff. But yeah, so I would encourage anybody to do their library and don't wait as long as we did.
So you got one for the kid, each one of the kids and
family.
Oh, the family, the whole thing. Okay.
Yeah. So it's like, I mean, it doesn't matter. It's like, it's all, you know, included pretty much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, how about we get into Mixed Dish?
All right. I was happy that I can talk about this one because I saw it in the wild. So Mixed Dish is the newest in the line of Kenya Barris. He did the Blackish and Grownish, and now he has Mixed-ish. Kind of a little...
I never heard of the other two.
You heard of Blackish, no?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, Blackish is a critically acclaimed, successful TV sitcom about an affluent African-American family.
Okay. And does it get into like the social and political overtones of that?
Big time, yeah. Huge.
That's how, because that I see that in this one.
Hugely, yes. So
yeah.
So the political overtones in that one, ABC actually asked them in Blackish to kind of scrap one of the shows that was like too overtly political. But I've watched a few of them at the gym and stuff, and they're still very, very political. It's a very woke show. Kenya's a great director, great, you know, showrunner.
Like, give an example of some of the political things they talk about.
Well, they're in a ad marketing agency. He's a partner in an ad marketing agency.
Okay.
And it's your typical, I mean, it is dealing with the world as it is today. It's, you know, it's dealing with Trump. It's dealing with all of the politics that's bound up into the racial history of America.
Yeah.
You know, they have flashbacks all the way to slavery, but it is a sitcom. You know what I mean? So it's really a very well developed show, and it got renewed. And then Grownish is their daughter going off to college.
So Grownish is the Blackish spinoff?
Yes.
Okay, so it's the same family and everything. It's just the girl's going to college. Got it.
It's the same family. It's only, right, the girl's going to college, and that's her experience going to college. So now Mixed Dish is the third in the line. Instead of doing the sequel or the parallel that Grownish is, they've gone with a flashback here. So now we take the mother's life growing up, and we kind of spin it into a TV show. So this is, what she say, the 80s?
And it's the mother of the show from Blackish?
Yes, the matriarch in the show, well, not the matriarch, because there are grandparents there, but the head of the household,
So it would behoove me to watch Blackish first.
Just watch I don't know. It feels like it's pretty self-contained.
Yeah. I mean, it looks amazing. I mean, I love the way it looks. You know, you call in the question, like, and I use air quotes, but it's kind of like, you know, the typical black person, typical white person view of the world in this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So when they walk in and there's like all the black people in the side saying like, well, you know, you're not us. And then there's the white people saying like, well, you're not us. And like, well, what are you guys? Because like, we have no clue, you know, and I just love how it brings in, you know, and everybody nowadays, like they were saying like, oh, yeah, we have a president, a princess and everything. But when I was a kid, we had the barge.
Yeah, no. And I think it speaks to me as I've been, you know, exploring my Asian Americanness and kind of something that I haven't really talked about or identified with for so many years.
Sure.
I do identify with the idea of saying, you know, this part says you're not part of us and then this other part says you're not part of us. But in all the panels that we've talked to, we've had plenty of people that are half Asian American and half Caucasian or half something else. And that's kind of where we are now. There's so many of us that are truly mixed now that, like she said, you know, there's all kinds of all people from all walks of life that are like that. But even though this has existed for a very long time, just the prevalence of it hasn't been a lot.
No, I mean, I think overall, you know, the innocence of the children make it amazing.
Yes.
Because they don't even know what they are. They're clueless, really. They're just, they're them, right? They're themselves. But like, it's society placing all these labels. It's society telling them they're either who they are or they're wrong for being who, whatever it is, right?
Right.
And they're just like, you know, and when the girl stands up, like, you know, what does she say? Like, I want to be clueless too, you know, because she doesn't even know, right?
Right.
And the reality is she is clueless to like what society is putting on her.
Right. No, I think anytime that you could end a trailer or a promo with a little half black, half Caucasian girl squirting a water gun into the sky and saying, I love the Second Amendment.
Right, right.
I think you've won the, you know, just the audacity of your writing for the day, you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and that's what I love about it, though, is like when you look at, you know, part of the ride today was across private property. I didn't know I was on private property until I got to the other side, right? So I crossed through this gate.
I took business law, and that knowledge of breaking the law does not matter.
No, I understand. So I crossed through this gate, and I just cruised down the road not realizing. And I come to another gate that's closed, and I put my bike over, I jump over, and I'm on the other side, and I'm just eating some food. Like kind of taking a break and getting some nutrition. And here comes like this whole like caravan of like vans and cars and all this stuff. And, you know, I just give a friendly wave. And then like I'm on the public side now. And the first and the first person looks at me and they go, this is private property.
Oh, no.
And just drives off. And I thought to myself, I'm not even on the private side and they're yelling at me, you know? And but in other words, what I'm getting at with that story, and I wound up flipping the fence or the gate when I went back that way because I had to, you know?
Yeah.
But what else am I going to do, right? But anyway, I bring that up, though, because it's like there's clever ways to discuss, like, I mean, it's a road that just connects another section of road, but like nobody can drive on this, like, and it's probably maybe like a mile and a half, 2 mile section of road. But it's like we just have this idea that, you know, what's mine is mine. We can't share. Or, you know, like I love the Second Amendment. Everyone else could go to hell, you know. And, you know, it's just like this. So like this is mine. Keep out, you know, or this is mine. You know, go F yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of like where society's at, you know, and I love how this kind of seems to me that it's going to call into question like all these notions that we hold that we that we find close and dear to our hearts that we're gonna say like, man, we are a bunch of just idiots. I want to watch it. And that's why now I think like I need to go watch Blackish. Grownish, I mean, whatever, she goes to college. I might not watch that one, but Blackish to Mixedish, I think I'm going to watch. Looks awesome.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah.
Please watch.
Please watch. Yeah.
Are you going to watch it on Hulu? You don't have Hulu. How are you going to watch it? I guess you could watch it over there.
Yeah, I haven't gotten there yet. I just learned about it like about 20 minutes ago. Let me figure out the logistics there, Ted.
We'll work together on that.
Yeah, so. I think I can figure it out, though. Always Be My Maybe.
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds like a Carly Rae Jepsen song.
Or who did Always? I think that's Always Be My Baby is, who is that, Dan? Always Be My Baby.
No, Be My Baby.
Oh, Be My Baby. No, Always Be My Baby is a, not Whitney, but the other one. Yeah, so Always Be My Baby, I think, is a Mariah Carey song, isn't it?
I thought you were talking about the Ronettes. Be My Baby.
Oh, no.
Can I ask, though, before we get to the next trailer, I don't want to jump ahead too far.
Yes.
Always Be My Baby and The Farewell, which is what we're going to get to.
Right.
Are these both released because it's Asian American Month? And did you choose them for that reason?
I don't know. I guess I am more sensitive and more attuned to it.
If we go back like five episodes when you're like, I always identified as white. Now you're like, white? Oh, hell no, man. I am Asian to the core. Is that how you are now?
No. I just thought it was interesting that all these things started to come out, you know. So, and I have,
because you're sensitized to it.
I am, yes. I've become a little more sensitized to it, and it's
right.
And this one, I like what's funny, and to me, this one is super funny. You know, like the
Always Be My Maybe. You mean
Always Be My Maybe?
Yeah,
feels like just like a rom com of the, you know, of the 90s. You know, it has like this place in time. It's not a complete reboot of a specific rom com, but I feel like rom com is definitely thriving in this space, in the streaming space of Netflix. This is a Netflix movie.
Yeah.
Randall Park, which is the romantic lead in this, is kind of having his time. He's in a lot of stuff. He was, you know, he's in Ant-Man and the Wasp, actually, and he's doing tons of work. Ali Wong is a great actress, too. So this has just a phenomenal cast with a time-honored tradition of rom-coms, and it feels like it goes through the paces of it, and it feels like it has this, you know, coolness. What I think... I said it's Crazy Poor Asians, you know, like it kind of was like a repackaging of like, you know, Asians don't have to be rich, you know, they don't have to be poor. They can kind of just be themselves, and you don't necessarily need to be the stereotype of what you're known for. That's that, you know, model minority myth kind of thing.
Right. So yeah.
I think this breaks down the model minority myth while having fun with, you know, just in the space of a rom-com. So I think it's important to do important things in kind of trivial spaces, because I think that's where you move the needle. I think you move the needle by making things normal, normalizing things, and just kind of making shifts to new normals. So I love this new normal space where, you know, before this would be called an Asian, and maybe that still is, an Asian American rom-com, you know what I mean? But I like to think of it just as a rom-com, because we showed, or the industry showed with Crazy Rich Asians, that a rom-com theatrical release can be a blockbuster, regard, you know, even if it's all just Asians, you know, so, or Asian Americans.
Okay, so I've been racking my brain trying to figure out, and I can't remember. So like, if you date somebody, the relationship ends, you go back to that other relationship.
Right.
You hang out for a little bit until like the next one comes up.
Uh-huh.
You break it off, you go back, and then back and forth. But that's not a booty call. What is that? I can't remember.
Friends with benefits?
Is that what it is? Friends with benefits?
Maybe.
Yeah.
It really depends on the level of intimacy.
Right. And then the other thing I was a little confused about, I'm like, why Keanu Reeves? But then I realized, like, he's like, I don't know the exact percentages, but he's like a quarter Hawaiian, a quarter Chinese, you know, and then he's British and Portuguese, and he's like everything, but he's got that Asian in there. So I guess he fits the... He fits into the movie.
No, but I think it's important to not necessarily only have Asians in there. And I thought it was, I think it's a great snag. You know what I mean? It's like, who do you want to play the foil in this relationship? You know what I mean? You already have Daniel Dae Kim, who, you know, from Lost and Hawaii Five-0, and, you know, he's the hard body, you know, hot throb, you know, who jilted her at the beginning.
Right.
But to have Keanu Reeves come up as the foil is just phenomenal. And on top of being Keanu Reeves, the acting superstar that he is, he's also like this super nice person. And I think it kind of bleeds into how he gets away with these roles, where he gets away with John Wick because in real life, he's a super nice person. He gets away with like stealing our lead protagonist's girlfriend, or, you know, prospective girlfriend, because, you know, we know he's a cool guy. But to me, the funny thing on the marketing side of this was Netflix, in their official trailer for this, they have properly, you know, Ali Wong and Randall Park in there. But in the other kind of the other aggregators of trailer aggregators that were trying to do it, they put Keanu Reeves in the thumbnail. And I think that's some A/B testing. I think the Keanu Reeves thumbnail is a provocative thumbnail. And, you know, because I'm always searching for all these trailers, I click, that's the first one I saw. I saw that one before I saw the Netflix one that I verified it with, but I was waiting to see Keanu Reeves, and you click on Keanu Reeves' face, and then you watch this, you know, most of this trailer, and the only thing that gives it away, it's kind of a reveal that's a little spoiled by the thumbnail. So, you know, when she starts talking about her boyfriend that she she found when, you know, Randall Park's about to like say that he loves her or something, you know. I knew that it was Keanu Reeves because of the thumbnail, but
right.
I would have liked to have saved that surprise the way Netflix wanted to save the surprise for you if you had watched it on their feed, on their channel.
Yeah, for sure. I know what you're saying. And then, yeah, I mean, I think it looks pretty cool. I mean, it's just your typical rom-com is kind of the way I see it. You know, you start off and it's kind of like Meet the Parents. And then he goes to, well, I guess he's going to marry the woman. And then, but the ex-boyfriend, she used to date Owen Wilson, and he's kind of the, you know, the playboy, makes the money, has all the, you know, he's the carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
He does all this stuff, but like it almost appears as though she's settling for Ben Stiller, you know? And
yes,
the Owen Wilson character was like so much like better in like so many ways when it comes to like just all of his skills and abilities. But then really she did actually love the Ben Stiller character, right? And that's kind of what I get out of this is, like, you know, she wants to be with the like you said, the hard-bodied playboy guy, but then she goes back to Randall Park, and that's who she was with like whatever 15 years earlier, and he's still driving the same car and all this stuff. Like, he's kind of like comfort food.
Yes,
right? You go back to the, you know, he's like the pillow that you always like to snuggle up with, or your favorite blanket, but there's always something more exciting out there, and she wants to be with the more exciting, but she keeps going back to him.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It's one of those stories I think that can probably touch home for like a lot of people.
Just in relationship.
I know a lot of people who have done exactly this, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're dating somebody that seems cool and exciting because they're hot or whatever. And then you realize like the better looking they are, the more of a jerk they are. So then you settle back to like, you know, Mr. Comfy or Miss Comfy, and then you get somebody else who's hot, and then you kind of dump them for a while, and then you realize that person's an ass, and then you come back again, you know, and it just repeats and revolves over and over and over again, you know?
Yeah, it's amazing. It is a time-honored tradition. That's why there's a whole set of movies in this, you know, boy gets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets girl back, you know?
Right, right. All right, how about The Farewell? I don't have a lot to say about it. So I
can't. Oh, okay.
One of the things I already mentioned was about the Asian American month, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, the reason I put The Farewell in here was, you know, I guess I was on a roll of of like Asian and kind of this space. So it felt like it was in there. But also I could tell it's Awkwafina. But to me, Awkwafina is like this comedic actress, and she's, you know, in Ocean's 8, and she's doing a lot of other stuff. You know, she's in Crazy Rich Asians.
Right.
But she always has a comedic angle to her. And just to have her have a role where she has to play sad is refreshing. And, you know, it really shows her acting chops. It allows her to stretch. It allows her to be, you know, to go places her previous roles haven't given her, you know? So I appreciate that. I appreciate her doing this. And the story seems pretty solid. And whereas you have something that is, you know, culturally significant to us in the last one where you're talking about it's kind of this rom-com. This seems like very foreign to me, and literally to have something foreign that could be a Chinese, you know, known way of handling death, you know, and cancer and things like that is an amazing kind of thing. So I don't know if that is culturally true or not. And to me, that's the thing I was struggling with when I was trying to, you know, share this with friends and family.
Yeah, like different cultures obviously do death differently. The one thing I would say, probably the primary reason I'm not going to watch this is subtitles.
Yes.
I mean, not the problem I have with subtitles is I miss half the subtitles because maybe I look away or, you know, I blink, you know, whatever it is, like subtitle I miss.
Mm-hmm.
And then while I'm reading the subtitles, I miss the whole movie because I'm reading words. I'm not watching what they're doing.
Exactly.
I miss the facial expressions, the unspoken language and body movements. And the whole point of acting is to see an actor act.
Yes.
If I want to read a movie, then I'll just read the transcripts or whatever, you know, and read the. I mean, like, the whole point I'm getting at is I just don't do. I mean, I have done some A Beautiful Life and all that. And
oh, yeah.
I mean, I do some, but
you do only the ones that break through and kind of are must watches.
Yeah. And even then it's tough, you know, but
yes.
But I mean, like, I want to get into the actors and their role and what they're doing and how they carry themselves. And like, what do they like if you're watching a Tarantino movie, like what they do with their hands is important.
Yes.
You know, and like just facial expressions and how they purse their lips or something or whatever it is, all adds to the story and the mood and all that. And if I'm spending my time reading and missing that stuff, then I mean, I could just plow through words, but I'm missing what's actually happening, you know. But overall, I would say the story looks like it's going to be an emotional roller coaster. And now that we know you're a crier, I hope you have your tissue.
Oh, yes. I am a crier.
Yeah, that's what we hear. Yeah. So overall,
I agree with you.
Subtitles and everything?
I agree with you. I'm not crazy about subtitles for all the same reasons I get caught up. I think personally, I'm a very slow reader. And I think that's part of the drawback to me is that it takes me longer to read the stuff on the screen. So without all the time in the world, you know what I mean? It's not...
Yeah,
it's harder to get through it, and like you said, it takes you out. It's kind of an alienation method, you know. It pulls you out of the space of getting lost in the movie.
Yeah, and you know, I think another thing that you kind of triggered is you lose like the subtleties in language, right? So, and I don't know. I mean, I know like something like Thai, for example, is a tonal language, right? I don't really know what all the different tones mean and the point. Of it all. I mean, it has meaning in their language, in Thai. But when you consider like whatever's going on, and if you say something one way and you say it another way, it's the same word, but it changes like the context, the meaning, how it's applied or whatever. And even in English, when you have somebody raising their voice, lowering their voice, or you uptalk the end, you drop the end, you know, like things like that, right? There's meaning
in that.
And that meaning could lead to questions, or you're more sincere, you're more sarcastic, you know, things of that nature. And I think if I'm just reading it as fast as I can before they flash to the next thing that's being said, and I'm missing out on all of the other stuff, like I'm just lost in what's going on.
Exactly. No, it's a very good point. And like you said, every language and every... It could also be even as minute as regional, you know what I mean? It could be, you know, in the West Coast, we say something a certain way, in the South, they say it another way. And
yeah, dialects, essentially.
But even beyond dialects, like you said, the intonations and the flow of something.
Oh, for sure.
Is important to read into.
Yeah. I mean, the story overall, though, I mean, you know, the grandma, I mean, we've all have had grandparents. Well, I guess I shouldn't say all, but most people have had grandparents of some, you know, whether they had all four or only a couple or whatever it is. And we lose these people and their stories and their histories. And generally speaking, you know them in your younger years, because in your older years, they're just not there because, you know, people pass away.
Yeah.
And even when you're in your older years, then like dementia sets in or other illnesses, they can't talk about it. So like seeing a relationship develop and then like end, I mean, that's, man, that's going to be like a roller coaster of a movie, I think. Emotional roller coaster.
If we can get into it while we're reading subtitles.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
But you know what? What's not going to have any subtitles?
Angel has fallen.
Now, can I ask the Jimmy question here?
Oh, go ahead. I already know what I'm going to say.
Do we need another Fallen movie?
Another Fallen movie. I didn't think of that, but...
But, I mean, this is the third, right? This is the third one. It's like, what, Olympus has fallen?
Right.
I gotta look it up. and then the Britain has fallen.
Well, here's my question. Any movie that opens with Buffalo Springfield, do you immediately think military?
Yeah, I think so.
Like army movie or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like always, right?
Uh-huh.
Like the minute that song comes on, as they're playing through the production company cards, you're like, oh, it's going to be something militant.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's, I think this movie, though, has a major flaw that the trailer doesn't address, and I don't know if the movie will.
Tell me.
No idea. So all these drones come flying in, which brings up another point I want to make. But all these drones come flying in.
Yes.
To assassinate the president,
mm-hmm.
played by Morgan Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're going to do is like blow up the whole fishing party.
Yes.
You know, spoiler alert.
Trailer spoiler alert.
Right. So, you know, if you lose it within the first 30 seconds, I mean.
Maybe you didn't get to it.
Right. No, but they're going to blow up the whole fishing party.
Mm-hmm.
And for what it's worth, like, you know, they save the president's life.
Gerard Butler does, yeah.
So then the next scene, they show him chained to the bench, probably recovering from whatever happened. And they're blaming him for an attempted assassination.
Yeah, to me, that was just like an easy... Oh, you're saying we missed something in the middle there?
But the flaw is... Wouldn't Morgan Freeman say, no, he didn't? And then the movie's over. Or, oh.
The president had to go into hiding, didn't he?
Oh, mistaken identity. You know what? Okay, I'm going to pardon him then.
Right.
Like, I don't even get this movie.
So the trailer has maybe some plot holes in it. But being a trailer, to me, you can have some plot holes, especially if you're not trying to reveal everything about the movie. So if you have, let's say on the first cut, we know, right? We've interviewed a few trailer editors.
Yeah.
They'll have some cuts, you know, that go out. And then they have to pull back pieces because of revealing too much, spoilers. You know, we're saving this for like the last big push marketing-wise, or we really want to save this piece for the movie. So you have a different set of creatives dealing with marketing and a different set of creatives in the movie. So the rope that I give trailer editors and trailers like this that have plot holes is that they went to explain it, or they were told they can't use this section of the film, or this section of the film isn't done yet, or it's too big of a spoiler. You know what I mean? So I will give them the benefit of the doubt on how we get from there to there.
Sure. Okay.
Or what is the thing in the movie? Maybe it needs to be addressed a little bit, but it's not, you know, I don't think that is holding. I don't think that's what an audience for this film is hanging on. You know what I mean? They just want to see Gerard Butler get out of situations. You know what I mean?
So what you're saying is the people who are going to go see this don't pay attention to logic, right?
No, that's not at all what I'm saying. Not at all what I'm saying. This is a very popular franchise from my estimation.
Yeah. Well, it must be if they keep making them.
If you're making three movies on it, yes.
Right.
It's going to be popular. But it goes beyond that. It's just like, we're having a movie. Let's string some cool shit together and just like keep it light. You know,
like all we want to do is just blow stuff up and have a lot of gunplay. And then, okay, so then that brings in the explosive drones or whatever, right?
Yes. Tell me this here.
So the other thing I was thinking is, like, it seems in movies, like we covered Child's Play, you know, 4 weeks ago or whatever it was. I don't remember the episode, 68 maybe. And we covered Child's Play, and it was really about, it was like another Chucky movie. But the spin on this one, though, was more about like how, you know, smart devices can murder you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in this one, like people like we have this irrational fear of like, you know, drones or something.
Yes.
The only problem I do have, though, honestly, is like if Amazon were to do drone deliveries, the sky would literally look like that because there's just so many delivered all the time, every day. Like, right. It would be like, what is that? Bats? Nope. Ted's getting a TV. you know, and like some big drone flies over, drops it off.
God, I hope Sony listens to our podcast. That's like the second week in a row we're talking about me getting a new big screen TV.
That's funny. Yeah.
I'll take a Vizio too. If I we'll sponsor whoever sends me a TV.
That's right. That's right. But you know, I mean, so I think they're bringing in like part of that is addressing like technophobia fear.
Yes.
In a sense. Right.
Well, and I think this kind of goes into the idea of the other. So the other is the enemy, you know, and as we go into a space where it's so stereotypical to make a certain person of this country's origin X, you know, as the enemy.
Well, we don't know who the enemy is.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's always safer to say like technology is the enemy.
Oh, I follow you. Yeah.
Or this other thing's the enemy. Or, oh, the enemy is actually just someone who is on our side, but has misunderstood the scenario because you're trying to protect the president from actually getting assassinated. And there's a mole in the Treasury Department or something, you know? So it's easier to do away with the idea of making a culture the enemy and just putting in its place. Instead of saying X culture is an enemy, you say, ooh, artificial intelligence or, you know, technology's enemy.
Well, and I think one of the things about technology being the enemy is that even within technology, like you could have a chip developer and a software developer. And I mean, if you think about like how many lines of code are in, you know, just average software, I mean, it's like millions of lines of code.
Yeah.
And even within the software developers, the software engineers, and even the hardware and so on, right? Like it's so disparate from everybody else, and everybody's writing their little line of code and piecing it together with everyone else's lines of code and trying to get it to work with hardware, and everybody's trying to get it onto like an iPhone or an Android phone or Windows, Apple, all this stuff. It's like when you look at Silicon Valley and the tech industry, I mean, the average person has no idea. That's why I always say like it's automagic, you know, because like I don't know how any of this stuff works. It's so complex. And then bring in like the cloud and bring in storage and then privacy. And then, you know, like where does it begin and end? And I mean, it's like a minefield to navigate. So it's easy to make technology an enemy.
There's so much unknown to it, right?
Even the people working in it have unknowns because they know their thing, but they don't know like everyone else's thing.
Yeah, and you don't know when you create something and you have a motivation to create it for a reason that's, you know, it's a positive reason, a good reason, you know, you have no idea how after you expose that to 85 million, whatever it is, you know, after you...
People are creative.
People are creative in how they use it and for their ulterior motives. So you have to really go to like the darkest place and how can this be misused? I mean, I listen to a lot of
4chan.
Yeah. I listen to a lot of tech pods and it's like Apple never built that back door for the government because they said the back door just by its mere existence will get misused. You know what I mean?
We
understand why the government wants it for the proper usage, but its mere existence will inevitably get misused. So we're not building it into the system, you know?
And once something like that is known, people are going to be taking sledgehammers to it, trying to find it.
Yeah, they take sledgehammers to it anyway, even when it's not there, you know?
Exactly.
I mean? They're trying to break in. So you make a weakness like a door, you know?
Oh, man. I know.
There is nothing unhackable.
Yeah, and that's right. The beginning of the trailer, and there's much more to the movie, obviously, and that's the scene that kind of gets you into it.
Yeah.
But there's probably other technologies in the movie, I would assume, that the enemy's using, whoever the enemy is. I get the idea from the trailer that the enemy is within the government.
Yes, it's definitely a mole situation.
Right, I who knows what. Maybe it's like the head of HUD or something, you know, but... I don't know. Are you going to watch this?
So I'm interested because of the technology aspect of it.
Okay.
I'm interested. There's a father-son aspect to it that seems interesting. And then he and his dad's Nick Nolte, and he's off the grid, you know what I mean?
So right.
It's kind of playing into the tropes of, you know, what are they called? Not World Enders, but the Future Man with, I think, Tomorrow Man.
Oh, like post-apocalyptic,
survivalists.
Survivalists, yeah. Like you're living off the grid you're going to be in your compound.
I got my pallet of spam and I'm good to go.
Yeah, pallet of spam. I got a pocket full of shotgun shells and no one's getting near it.
So those things are interesting to me. Will I see it in a theater? No, probably not. But I think this is something that we're definitely going to red box or get at our local library, which is something you can do.
Yeah, there you go. Ted brings it back full circle. So with that, Ted, what are you watching this week?
All right. So we had quite the week of watching movies.
Oh, man.
Let's see. So this week on Tuesday, my mother-in-law was still in town. Oh, my God. Special thanks to Frank and Barbara. Having my mother-in-law stay with Frank and Barbara was a great experience for everyone involved. I know Ami Rose loved being over there, and I hope Frank and Barbara liked having her. They said they did, but you never know. But it was a great time, and they shared a lot of camaraderie. And then, last week we didn't even talk about it. We had Mother's Day together, you and I and our families.
Yeah, that's right.
So that was a lot of fun. But on Tuesday, Anne wanted to take my mother-in-law said she wanted to see Palms. So Anne took my mother-in-law to see Palms. And then, my AMC, our A-list card or whatever it is, Stubbs Reward Premier Membership. We don't have the A-list. We have the Premier Membership. And so after school, because my mother-in-law is in town, we're like, let's do something fun. And the kids are like, let's see a movie. So they saw another movie. What movie did they see? They saw Shazam. So Anne saw Palms. And then after school, she saw Shazam. And then we all got together and I came home. And then Anne and I went out on date night because my mother-in-law is here to watch the kids. So we ended up seeing Tolkien that night. We did a little calculation. And Anne saw over an hour of trailers on Tuesday, 22 minutes for each of the day movies and 20 minutes for Tolkien of trailers watched.
Why am I talking to you?
So it was a lot of Tolkien was a great movie. I loved the play on how he grew up.
How long was the movie?
It's a couple hours.
Oh, so it's not nearly as long as one of his books.
Right? Yeah, I guess they had a better editor.
Yeah, there you go.
No, but I think, his books, it definitely wanted me to, it definitely made me want to watch The Hobbit or Lord of the Rings or something like that right away after that.
Oh, that's cool.
Because the imagery and kind of the Easter eggs that they could throw in this period piece were phenomenal, And the few that I picked up on, I'm sure there were tenfold more because I'm not a super, super fan of the Lord of the Rings, but I've definitely seen all of them.
So it was a biography then of Tolkien.
It's a biography of Tolkien. It's played out over the war and it kind of has the flashbacks of his childhood through, as he's trying to find his best friend in the war.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And, spoiler alert, but we're at the end of our pod here. So if you haven't seen Tolkien, you can turn us off, or you just skip a little ahead a little bit. But it's the most melancholy movie for somebody who gets the girl of his dreams and survives the World War, He, at the end, he has the girl that he's been chasing the whole movie. He gets her. She sits by his bed while he's recuperating and unconscious. And, the priest finally gives him his authority or his blessing to get married to the woman because of how devout she was to him. And in the end, you still feel very sad for him because his core group of friends has kind of been diminished and was destroyed by this war. Some of his friends die. Some of his friends come back with PTSD. And he never interacts with them as he did when they were children. But the thing that I loved about that is that the friends that you have in high school or college, it's a very different life that you live when you're in those spaces. And you don't necessarily need war to divide you from your friends of adolescence. You know what I mean? So it's always a mixed bag when you grow up and you become an adult, and then you have your adult circle of friends. And for people that stay close and stay in kind of a regular contact with their high school friends, I guess I envy them, or I would love to have had that kind of experience. But I definitely connected with the idea of going through a life change that has separated you from people.
Yeah. Wow. Cool. Sounds like a good one.
Yeah.
And you've seen other things too this week?
Well, I mean, we did The Little Mermaid.
Oh yeah, at the Hollywood Bowl.
And The Little Mermaid at the Hollywood Bowl was such a plussed out experience. They, you know, beyond having the actors, the actors and singers do the songs of the movie, they've actually recut it a little bit to allow for some of the Broadway performance to have some of the songs from the Broadway show. So it allows you for more song opportunities. And then the Hollywood Bowl has projection that's around the screen. So they have a whole bunch of graphics that are projected on the actual Hollywood Bowl itself.
Oh, yeah, right.
And then they called it the Hollywood Fish Bowl. and they that's had a special let's go out to the movies intermission where it's actual like fish going out there. And they did like fake promos to other Disney Pixar movies with, you know, fish, you know, like Koi Story instead of Toy Story, you know?
That's funny.
So that was a blast. And then thank you to Carrie for those amazing box seats. You know, we sat
oh, wow. Nice.
And we were super close. I'll post a little picture on our show notes.
Yeah. Very cool.
To show you where we are. But I felt so fancy. I tweeted out today. I was like, saw a show at the bowl last night. Feeling super fancy. So this morning I got up and I replaced the wax ring on our toilet.
Well, you know, that's what you do when you're fancy.
No, I was like, let me bring myself back down to earth. I'll replace the wax ring on the toilet. It's been, you know, there's been like little signs of not massive leaking, but there's some leak, you know, around the
edge.
Oh,
right. Yeah.
So I got this new foam thing that like, why?
I put the same one in.
We advanced. Yeah. The Sani Seal, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, why haven't we advanced past the wax ring? Why do we keep getting this wax ring all the time? It's stupid.
Yeah. It sticks. I don't know. Yeah, so we watched Doctor Strange.
Oh, good. Did you like that?
Not really. So, again, it gets back to the magical side of the Avengers Marvel and such. And it's the magic stuff or the supernatural stuff that I just can't get into.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And it was just a little over the top with just how they can do the mirrored where they don't really hurt anybody in the regular world, but they can hurt each other. And I don't know. I just wasn't really, hey, it's no Ant-Man.
So now you have Ant-Man at the top of your MCU pinnacle of Jimmy Carissa's universe.
I think so. I think Ant-Man is what everybody needs to strive for.
Aspire to Ant-Man.
So I think we have Ragnarok, Thor Ragnarok coming
up.
Oh,
I'm very interested. Okay, so... Okay, next week. Please watch that before next week.
Yeah, no, we plan to. And that one, I think, is still streaming. So maybe we can watch that one sooner. I don't know. But
oh, cool.
So we'll see. I mean, the Thor movies are okay. I don't mind those as much. But yeah, Doctor Strange, though, I just didn't get into as much.
Thor Ragnarok is the most Ant-Man of all three of the Thor movies.
Well, I might like it then.
And I think that was the criticism of Thor Ragnarok was it too much
Ant-Man?
Too tongue-in-cheek for Thor, who's god of thunder and lightning or whatever.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll see. Otherwise, I don't think we really... I watched like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles with the boys.
Oh, did they like that?
Oh, yeah, of course they like that. You know, so I did that one, and that was That was probably about it, I think. And then they watched.
Did you have pizza?
No, this we got home yesterday and they wanted to watch something. I said, let's watch a movie.
Uh-huh.
And so that's what they chose. And then after, oh, but I did make homemade sauerkraut.
Oh.
With garden fresh cabbage.
Oh, but you said it was stinking up. Is it finally done stinking up the whole garage?
Oh, we ate it, man. It was like the best sauerkraut I ever had in my life. I mean, it smells like rotting flesh.
Oh, no.
But it's amazing how good it tastes. Like, the smell is not congruent with the flavor. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the stink is like beyond belief, but it was really good. And the way I do it, I'll give you my little recipe secret, and then I guess we can cut out of here. But
yeah,
I just put bratwurst and I poke holes with a fork.
Mm-hmm.
I pile on the sauerkraut. I pour in two cans, however much you need to cover everything of PBR. And then I just boil it until it's cooked.
Uh-huh.
And then I throw them on the gas grill for like 5 minutes just to get that kind of...
crisp them up.
Yeah, that sear going on a little bit. And then boom, ready to go. Mustard, hot dog bun.
You don't grill some peppers?
No, I put onion and, you know, I chop up onion and I chop and the sauerkraut. And then that's pretty much the way we go with it.
You Chicago guys, you know, you got to throw all that stuff on a hot dog.
Well, you know, you can't have a hot dog without a salad. That's how we get our salad.
That's the only way to get vegetables into.
Yeah, when people Midwest. Say like I've gone, you know, I'm eating salads now. It's like, oh, so you finally came around to a Chicago dog.
One last thing, because it was a lot to take in for the Little Mermaid. I just wanted to send a special thanks to Anne. She definitely spent a lot of time planning and preparing this evening, and I'll put some pictures of our table.
Did you guys have a picnic?
Exactly. We had a beautiful picnic.
Yeah.
With the
that's always nice fun.
Fried chicken dinner. That they set the tables up, and they got a little level out, and they're leveling out the tables. And then Anne got the red and white checkered tablecloth and a little fake flame candles there with a little centerpiece. You know, a whole smorgasbord of food options for the whole evening. So it was amazing.
Yeah, that's always fun to do with those picnics at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah,
yeah, very cool.
We were getting compliments on the way out. People are like looking at us. Break it down. They're like, oh, you guys went all out.
That's
and
funny.
And did, so it was great.
Nice. Well done. All right, man. Another show in the can.
Have a good evening.
Yeah, you too, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Bye. All right,
bye, Ted.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.